Welcome to Podnuts Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 237, Tickets or Invoices. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. Call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. The Computer Repair Podcast is brought to you by Ninja, the simple-to-use remote monitoring and management solution. Try it free at info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. Let me introduce the co-host. We have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Always good to have a little one-on-one time with the hash. And yes. Everybody in the chat.
Absolutely. Yeah, everybody listening to us live and on the internet afterwards. All right, let's go ahead, and since you're the only one besides myself here, I'm going to go ahead and let you share a tip or story that we could learn from.
Well, I got two tips today, two pretty quick ones. One was listening to the Podnuts Pro show, our friends over there, Double M, not the Triple M. But Marvin brought up a product by Elsoft called Active Data Studio, and it's probably one that I've had on my list for, who knows, ever since we've been looking at partition managers and backup software and all that kind of stuff, but I've never pulled the trigger. So they started talking about it. Matt jumped on the bandwagon, so I jumped on the bandwagon, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes. Bought the $200 license for the Complete Data Studio Corporate Edition. Got 2 years of support, and have probably used the product 20 times today and really, really like it.
Nice.
Should have done it a long time ago. So high recommendation so far, and I'll swing back on that if that changes. The other tool I've been using a ton today is by Carafred. He's the maker of our UVK tool that we use, but he has another tool called the Tech Tool Store that everybody should check out. Just a great little tool that allows you to download over 500 free technician tools and utilities and all that. And you can set up your own download lists and put in your own custom tools. It's just a handy way to get to what you need really quick. So those would be my two quick tips of the day.
Awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, I will also give a couple of tips. And the first one will be, make sure when you're doing a screen replacement that you actually take the cable and plug it all the way in. Because if you don't, Dell will let you know, and when you go to turn the computer on, it will beep at you ferociously. So I thought, it. You know, the other thing too is, go with your gut feeling. I knew when I connected it, and the long story short is, I had trouble getting the bezel off of a Dell laptop computer. It was a 17-inch. It didn't want to come all the way off. So instead of trying to yank it out and get it out of the way, I kind of just moved it out of the way because they bend pretty good to get the screen in. So I had little room to actually hook the cable back up for the screen itself. And so when I had pulled up on it, the tape had kind of stuck and I was like, I pushed up on it with my fingers and I'm like, it seemed pretty good, but I still don't think it's right, but it should be okay. And of course, if I had just undone the tape and redid it at that point, knowing that I didn't connect it properly, I could have avoided having to go back and undo the screws again. So it doesn't matter how long you've been doing this. You will make silly mistakes like that all the time. So that's my tip there. The other tip is, I have been changing my diet slightly. And what I mean by slightly, and I know this is nothing tech related, except it kind of is, because as we get busy in life, we are, sometimes we don't move around as much. Sometimes our health is not real good because we're just, eating a lot of food, not moving around. And so I know, and everybody knows, kind of how your body feels of what type of food you're getting, whether it's good or whatever. Anyways, so I've been trying to lose some weight, which is hard to do. And I know some people out there are laughing, but quite honestly, I'm 30 pounds overweight. I know I hide it well, as my wife will tell you, because I don't tuck in my shirts. It's very easy. Anyways, one of the things we started doing is, I've looked at different diets and stuff, and I'm not a real big diet fan. But what I started doing was eating chicken and having a, what I would call a, it's not a normal smoothie. The smoothie that we have in the morning is more of a celery-based, leafy kale, all that kind of stuff. No fruit, or yeah, a little bit of fruit. And it tastes fine. I mean, it tastes, when you get done, it tastes like you've just eaten a bunch of celery, but you get all these nutrients and different things, and it's really good for you. So I eat a big mason jar of smoothie in the morning, and then I will have a apple, an orange, and 4 ounces of chicken at lunchtime. And I might eat the apple or orange kind of in between to, you know, kind of get myself to lunch. And then when I come home, I eat 7 cups of salad with another 4 ounces or maybe even 8 ounces of chicken, depending. And once I started doing that, I've only done it for about a week or a little over a week now. To be honest with you, I have still cheated in between. I have sometimes gotten the craving and went and grabbed a pack of donuts or whatever. And so I haven't been 100% perfect on this diet. But even with that being said, I still lost like 3.5 pounds. So, and I can tell how much better I feel. I don't feel, this is going to sound weird, I don't feel bloated. I don't feel, you know, as tired. I feel more energetic. So I know that changing things like that, just small things, and I'm trying to wean myself off the sugar in a lot of the high carbs, not all carbs, but just a lot of the high carbs. So that's what I'm trying to do right now. And it's so far, I'm feeling a ton better. So I highly recommend that you find something that works for you. And there's, you're going to hear all kinds of things out there. I just took what a bunch of people said, kind of picked and choose what I thought I could maintain for my life for a short period of time, or even, you know, you can grill chicken and chicken tastes good to me. You know, you put different spices and stuff on, it's fine. You wouldn't think you could eat 7 cups of salad, but you absolutely can. I almost feel like a rabbit. So anyways, that's my couple of tips for this week.
Been there, done that on the screw tightening or the cable tightening. I think we've all done that.
Yeah.
About a 100 times, depending on how many years you've been doing this. But yeah, still, I'm always fighting the diet. If you're holding 30 pounds extra on that frame of yours, you're hiding it pretty well, brother. If that means you're holding 30, I must be holding about 70. So I better start eating some more chicken. All right.
Yeah, my goal would be to get back down to 160, but I'm only 5'9". As a lot of you that have met me know, I'm average. Because a lot of people are a lot taller than what I would have thought. So yeah, anyways. All right, let's go ahead and take
it. Reminds me of that Chicken Tonight commercial. You remember that?
No, I don't remember that one.
All right, put it in the link. Go on, move on.
All right. Let's go ahead and take a break, and then we'll get into our main topic for today. Our show today is brought to you by Ninja, the remote monitoring and management solution to help you become more efficient, more productive, and more profitable. With Ninja, you can have a faster fixed response time and offer preventative maintenance to your customers. Ninja understands what you need to run your business, which is why their RMM solution is integrated with tools you use every day. And there is a ton of tools in there that you can use, like I said before, without even remoting into your customer's machine. You can do a lot of it on the fly, in the background, not bothering them, which is awesome. They have competitive pricing, patch management, antivirus, email, SMS alerting. You can be up and running quickly with minimum training time, which I definitely like. I don't want to sit there and have to read a manual about 4 inches thick about how to use a product. You have TeamViewer integration for that remote support. It's one solution for managed and non-managed clients. Network visibility inside the RMM. See what's going on the network. Easy-to-read dashboards, a powerful device search where you can create custom queries and export the list to show your customers. If they want to know what you've been doing, you can show them. An executive-style report showing important system metrics such as health score, software added, removed, hardware changes, and team viewer connections. That gives you a lot of information quickly so you can figure out what is going on for all of the customers you support. Ninja is offering Podnuts a free 30-day trial, and when you decide to buy, a 10% discount. Take advantage of this offer. Go to info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. All right, let's go ahead and talk about our main topic. All right. So one of the things that came up last week on the show is we were talking about at the end of the show, tickets, invoicing. And I think I know this for me that I wasn't sure what they all were. I've heard the terms and you'll hear people kind of mix things together. They will talk about things. They'll talk about ticketing. What is ticketing? And then they'll talk about invoicing their customer. Then they'll talk about what they use for accounting so they can send to their tax accountant to take the information and be able to do your taxes. Sometimes these might all be rolled into one. Other times they might not be. They might be separate products that you maybe have to put that information in. Sometimes you will get products that will work together. So when you put the information in one, it will ship it off to another, which is kind of cool. So, and that's, we're always looking for that way to make our lives easier. We don't want to input something several times. And every one of us does it a little bit differently. And that's kind of the things we're going to talk about today. So, John, if you want to go ahead and let's go ahead and let you start with what are tickets to you?
Well, I really like how you started it off, Jeff. You know, the difference between a ticket, invoices, and accounting. I mean, you can even break that up further is where I would start. You know, tickets, and I'll put links to the Wikipedia articles on all this in the show notes. Tickets, invoicing, receipts, and accounting, I would all say, are different. If we were going to try to break those up maybe a little bit more. Let me start with the accounting. I think we know all know what that is, but I would call that maybe the Bible of your business. Maybe it's what guides you from a financial decision. You know, I always say, and the mentors I've had with my accounting always say, well, let the numbers lead you, John. You know, don't get personally involved in what you're doing. If it's financially what you're looking at, it's the numbers will lead you because they don't lie unless you're providing poor information. Right. So this is one of the tools you use to create your, you know, your business nirvana. So it's not, if you're not just about the money, you want to do what you love, you want to do what you want to do with whom you want to do it. But the numbers are definitely one place to start. So I use QuickBooks Online for that. That's my tool. I know you use your Excel spreadsheets for most of your numbers.
Yes, I
know. And everybody picks on you that, but that's your nirvana. It's my new word for the day. So, you know, I would say stay there. Be happy with what you're using. But what else is there? Like FreshBooks and about 1,000 other things that we could probably bring up that other people use. Ticketing, I think of it, is probably a simple way to say help desk. So ticketing would be one portion of what I would call a help desk system. Since I am a solo tech, I do not actually use a ticketing system at this point. I've developed my own system. Oh my gosh. But, you know, that is slowly changing, or actually right now quickly changing for some things that we'll get into here. But, you know, right now I have a system that works great just for me. So I'm a G Suite guy and have been way back since Google came out with Google Apps eons ago, and I've always used their products. Right now I use a combination of Google Email, Google Keep, and Google Calendar that works perfect for me. The problem is it only works for me. It doesn't work for my clients. Stinks at reporting. It's very hard to generate any metrics for me on what's breaking where and how. Everything is my finger in the air. You know, me keeping a track of that. And with about 800 endpoints to keep track of and all those customers, you know, obviously it's getting a little bit out of hand. And the biggest thing is compliance. Now I have to be able to do much, much better reporting for my compliance customers. So my help desk or ticketing system is what I would call the air traffic controller for my business. We don't want any planes crashing or especially running into each other. So it's the who, the what, the where, the when, why, and how of the business. So I think you really need one now, and I definitely need one now to track the entry of what's going on, what you should be working on, tracking that information, getting notification that you should be doing that, being able to see the history of what you've done, and look at the reporting for that, to provide that to your customers. And Jeff, you brought up a great point at the beginning about integration. So maybe you want to look at, let's just pick on one of our sponsors. If we go to Repair Tech and the friends over at Kabuto, now they have Recur. All those things are now nicely integrated. I mean, that's a big selling point if that's important to you. So just to throw my cards out on the desk or on the table, I'm looking at right now for my help desk solutions, I'm looking at Autotask, and their PSA program, which is what I would probably call the Cadillac. Very complex, lots of training, expensive compared to a lot of others. I'm not sure I need all that yet, but I've definitely dipped my toe into that. I'm looking at a product called Sherpa Desk, which I would call the easy way to jump into a help desk. Also very powerful. They have some great tips and tools in there. Plus the support there is great, very personal. And you buy the product, obviously they'll onboard you, but then you can buy consulting from them on setting it up. And the consulting fees they charge to do that compared to other people in this industry is very affordable. So you can get one-on-one, help me set it up. What would you do in this instance? Building your workflow, your ticket flow, and all that kind of stuff. And the other one I've started poking a little bit just for fun is Komodo One. I circled back on that. I don't know why. I think I got an email for somebody and I checked that out. It's pretty nice. So I'm looking at that too. Okay. So, and that's a lot of the Komodo One features are free to start. So if you're just starting out and you want to start out with a help desk, that might be a place for a beginning tech or even an old man like me to look at.
Okay. And I'll say from when I looked at ticketing, a lot of us will start off, and we've talked about the Technobook Computer Business Kit. They have tickets, invoices, receipts. And thank you, John, for bringing that up. I totally forgot about receipts because even though I generally do something a little bit different, I will take my invoice that I hand the customer, and as far as I'm concerned, that's their receipt. So I kind of combine that all into one. Again, anything to save some trees, make life a little easier for everyone. If I'm sending an invoice, obviously they have that invoice. That's a receipt for services rendered. I don't give them anything outside of that. But you can do it in a manual process. So you can take the Technibble Computer Business Kit, make a ticket, and what that'll do is it gives you the information of what's going on with the computer. And so at least you can file that information so that if you have to go back later and look at it, you can. Now, the thing is, after you get to X amount of 100 of customers, you are flipping through a file to try to find out when you last looked at that computer. So while you can start off this way, and it's a perfect way to start, there are other options out there that are free or nearly free that can get you started along that path. And we'll talk about those in a minute. But so ticketing to me is information, basically you're putting down of what you're doing to that customer's computer or what the problem, what did it come in for? And it's going to give that information. Now, customers will come back to me 6 months, a year, year and a half, 2 years later, and they'll say, do you remember when? And it doesn't matter. It could have been a month. And no, I don't remember what I did to your computer. I have no clue. So I have to go back in my file folder and pull it out. So that's one way of doing it. Then obviously we talked about a little bit about invoicing. Invoicing is going to be basically a bill of sorts, or what I use is a bill and receipt to the customer to be able to basically pay it and keep that as a copy of services rendered. What parts were replaced? What the fee was for things, what they had to pay. And this is why I caution people to don't undercharge in the beginning, because when you change it all of a sudden down the road and people go, well, wait a minute, last time you only charged me $50. Now it's $100. What happened? My prices went up. I don't know what to tell you. and you know what they do? They pay it. So I think when you have those two things are fundamental to start with. But then you have how, like John talked about, how you track your expenses, how you track your income, how you track all of your other outgo or expenses. And you have to have a way to track that, because guess what? The government wants what's the government's. And whatever that percentage is, that's what they want. So you've got to put all that stuff out there. Plus, if you think about things like tax deductions. So if you buy something, you use it in your business, you can get a tax deduction for that. And you can add it to however you want to do it. You can use Quicken, which it's funny. I actually use QuickBooks Online. I use Quicken for my personal finances, and I actually buy the this was really weird. I buy the personal business version, and I've never used a business portion of it, even though my account is tied into it, my business account. Don't ask me why. I started off using an Excel spreadsheet over 7 years ago, and I've been perfectly fine with that so far for the amount of business I do. The only time that really, trust me, it's still, even at this size, it's not fun because there's a lot of things that get forgotten. So down the road, when I get time or I make time, I would like to have something where I could integrate the ticketing, invoicing, and send it right to something like QuickBooks Online. I don't know that I would ever go to the QuickBooks desktop version. Now, you'll hear people talk about both, and there's pros and cons to both. Sometimes the QuickBooks Online maybe doesn't work as well as what people are used to in the desktop. I don't know because I haven't used either product. I've supported the QuickBooks desktop version for years. It's no different than Peachtree or any other accounting program out there. They're all fairly similar. But one of the things you can do is, if you think about ticketing and invoicing, one of the products you can use is actually Repair Shopper, which you can do 25 invoices a month for free. And you can put your customers in there. You can do all these cool things. Now, you don't get the marketing aspect and the follow-ups on the customers and stuff like that. But to get you started, especially if you're doing less than 25 invoices a month, that would be perfect for a lot of people. And what you can do is you can start building up that data, not only a database of customers, but you can take that information. And when a customer calls you up, it's very easy to go inside that program, type their name in the customer module, look them up. Oh, this is what we did last time. And I'll give you a perfect example. This happened to me a few weeks ago. Customer came in, handed me his desktop computer, which I had worked on before. I can't remember how long ago. Don't know, don't care. And he said, I think something's wrong with it. It's not booting up. He goes, you replaced the hard drive last time, didn't you? I'm like, I don't know. I can't remember. So, I just take it from him, whatever. And I go back in. And what I did was I went and looked at exactly what I had worked on before. No, the last time he had a video card problem, onboard video card was flipping out or something. Or I think he had an external or internal card that was flipping out, and we replaced the video card. That's why it wouldn't boot that time. So this time I go in there, I go, the hard drive's bad. And so I had to send him all this information and let him know that, hey, listen, not only I said, 6 months ago, a year ago, whenever I last worked on this, here's what we did. We replaced the video card, and now your hard drive is bad. So I let him know that, so there was no, wait a minute, you just replaced the hard drive. Because he doesn't remember. I don't remember. And so that's why it's good to have the documentation and keep all that stuff in place. And it once.
And I think you're just scratching the surface there, Jeff.
Absolutely.
Because one of the powerful things there I think you're getting at is not only trends, your help desk, if you combine the both, your accounting and your help desk, it should be able to show you where you're spending too much time and where you're losing money, not only where you're making money. If you ever get that feeling, it feels like I've put about 7,000 hours in this week. Why am I not flush with cash? You can also see the customers that are sucking the time out of you versus you making money from them,
right?
Or the job that you lost money on. Or you could even narrow it down and find trends in equipment, depending on the information you're pulling into your system and pulling out, meaning, boy, these Seagate drives are failing on me all the time. Or, boy, I seem to be having Comcast outages all the time. And you can trend it down to maybe a certain Comcast modem or a certain router you're using. So, I mean, just the historical service information is just one place to start. But if you really are trying to focus on saving time or narrowing and shaving off every minute that you can, that you have to have some sort of ticketing system that does that reporting.
And that's a good point, John, because the number one thing I find from most techs, and we're all guilty of it, the number one person that is lied to is us, by us. Because a lot of times you will hear people go, oh, it only takes me 10 minutes to do that. Have you actually timed yourself? And most of the time the answer would be no. And so things generally, in a generality, will take longer than what you actually think. So a lot of times, and that's why when we look at things that we do in the pricing model we use, a lot of times that's why, especially new techs starting out, they'll look at things and go, well, it only took me 15 minutes to fix this problem. Why should I charge somebody $100?
Well, I can remember that from a product I used to use a while back, and we'll just leave it at that. But I used to have to spend maybe about 5 minutes a week per customer to make a change, just to update something. We'll just call it like whitelisting.
Okay.
Just call it like I had to whitelist something. Well, you know, and I broke that down about with all the customers I had to make that change. And it ended up, I spent about 3.5 hours a week. A week.
Yes. Yep.
Doing that. But what, you know, I put 5 minutes on it. It really didn't take that long. But, you know, depending on where I was, if I was logged in, you know, getting to that equipment or that server that I needed to make the change on, you know, so I think, you know, that was exposed to me when I started doing some metrics way back then. I know now if I could collect more metrics that I would be finding even more like that.
Right. I agree.
So, you know, every time we log into a server or a computer, it only takes 5 minutes to make that change. Right. But how many times are you doing it a week? And if you could get 3.5 hours back per week, I mean, that's 3.5 hours of playing video games or 3.5 hours of billing something else. So just something to keep in mind.
Yep. Absolutely.
Good point.
Absolutely. So I think too, when you think about the differences of having something that's integrated, so you can take something like we've talked about, and there's other services that do this, but Repair Shopper will work with QuickBooks Online. And, you know, here's the thing, and let's just be straight up and honest. Are your integrations always going to work together 100%? No. And if you're expecting that, I'm going to keep the thought to myself because I don't want to put anybody out, but don't expect that. Okay.
The percentage is about the same as your RMM tool working the exact way you want it to all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Or any tool.
They all take care of feeding.
Or any tool. Think about virus removal. Why sometimes do we have to pull another tool out of the bag because one didn't work for us?
And I would also argue maybe the integration is not what you want. So, you know, you have to weigh the pros and cons of doing that. Don't just jump in and attach your Google account, your QuickBooks account, and all this other fun stuff to whatever product you're using, because maybe that's going to cause you more work in the long run. You know, what metrics do you actually need and what integration do you actually need? And maybe you don't need it now, but you could be forward looking. And when you choose a vendor also, how responsive are they to your requests? Meaning, I would like that integration, or I would like that script written, or I would like, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And don't listen to the salespeople and say, that's on the product roadmap. That's all good. But will you email me the page where it says that, or the link, or... because you got to be careful with that too.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know that there's nothing wrong with trying things out and seeing how they work. The problem becomes, because a lot of us tend to be busy, is taking the time and effort to be able to do that. Because we look at it, and if you look at it from a standpoint of loss of business time, you really are, it's like an educational road trip. And sometimes you got to take that in your business, though. You can't just go, well, I've been doing it this way for so long, and this is just the way I'm going to continue to do it because I don't have the time to look at it. Sometimes you got to take that time, and what's going to take a lot of time now will actually free up the time, like John was talking about, in the future. And again, little things.
Well, you know, we argue back and forth too, and we give some of our friends, you know, some grief about, man, why are you trying this? Why are you doing that? You know, like, I just went through a year where I tried a couple of different antiviruses and went through some RMMs and all that kind of stuff. You know, just like you said, that's, in my opinion, as long as you're doing it with focus, it's time well spent.
Yes. Yep.
You know, don't just do it just to jump on the bandwagon or just because somebody else says you should. But if you actually feel that it's going to save you those 5 minutes per customer per day, or, you know, what's the value that you're doing? And again, don't have your eyes closed as well. You know, be open to other things, but also don't get, you know, those can become a time suck as well. Yes. You know, just because it's new and shiny doesn't mean you should be using it. But I would also argue that you really don't know how it's going to work in your business unless you implement it in your business, because all the marketing material sounds like everything, you know, I'm going to be able to sleep till 11 o'clock every day and work for about 35 minutes and life will be great. And, you know, I'll have nothing to do because everything's auto magic.
Right.
But, you know, there are some auto magic things out there, but a lot of times you got to, you know, you got to be exposed to your business process and your clients. And it all comes down to that one comment that we all say, that it depends on what you need and want. So,
yeah. And we're all wired a little bit differently. So sometimes the way I do my business might be different than the way John does his business, and so on and so forth. The other thing to watch out for is, and I see this all the time, for some reason, because we are, again, I hate to put labels on this, but this is industry-wide, this is a generality, but it's true, we are cheap. And a lot of times, we don't want to pay for a product because we can do it with something, you know, that's maybe free or whatever. But here's the thing, don't look at the price of something, especially if you've got something that's already working for you. Now, there's all, you know what, there's a lot to be said for saving money. But here's the thing, a lot of people are out there and they're trying to save a penny, and they could be actually working in their business or billing a customer and making a dollar. So here's my advice to you, is go out there and just make more money. Now people go, oh, but it's so tight out there and IT's, you know, it's changing. And yeah, welcome to life 101. Suck it up and drive on. That's just the way it is. You can overcome any problem that you want to, as long as you want to. Or you can sit there and whine and cry. And I don't mean to be mean, but I'm trying to be point blank about this. So look at things that are going to work specifically for how you run your business.
And that we have some great examples of that already, even in our network. I mean, if we go back to Podnets Pro, I mean, I would suggest we have two pros right there, Marvin and that, you know, and one uses WatchGuard and one uses SonicWall.
Yes.
You know, if one was the best, why aren't they both using the same thing? And obviously, they're both extremely successful at what they do. So, you know, there's an argument there. And, you know, Ninja might do everything you want. I'm going to pick on them since they're a sponsor, but maybe you don't like their interface and you like the Logic Now interface. So it could be just that simple, that you just don't like the colors that they use, or they don't have the options of the interface you like. So you could break it down to be that easy or that simple of a problem for you that you can't get past. So it could be technical. It could just be the colors you like. I know you like pink, Jeff. So
absolutely.
And maroon. But yeah, I mean, you have to choose what works for your business and the way you want to do business. So yes. And again, right. I would always suggest don't choose something on price. Obviously, I wouldn't jump into the Cadillac if you're just starting off, but you have to choose something based on the value it's providing you.
Yes.
So even though you might have something that, I don't know, maybe you have a subscription that costs you $1,000 a month. Well, what's it generating for you? $1,500, $2,500? If it's only generating 200, then I would suggest you do have a problem. But, you know, let's, you know, look at the big picture, the value that those products bring to you.
Right. And so I think a lot of times too, when we're talking about, you know, tracking the finances and tracking what's coming in, what's going out, a lot of times I don't know that there's any hard, fast rules on things. And so some of this stuff you kind of make up as you go, but here's what you need to do. If you find an accountant, then use that accountant, use their brain. Hey, what things can I write off? What things can I do here? Now, you can ask this, and maybe you do this or you don't. You can ask, hey, what format would you like my finances in so that you can do my taxes at the end of the year? And maybe that is a QuickBooks, you know, QB file or something like that. But a lot of times it all depends on the accountant. They They're used to using things just like we are in a certain format. But I would argue that probably Excel, as long as it's laid out, would probably do just fine. I've been able to take an Excel spreadsheet, and it was the original one from the Technibble Computer Business Kit, and I've modified it. I learned how to work with Excel a little bit, and I was able to basically categorize different expenses, the money coming in, income, and all that kind of stuff, jobs, parts, so on and so forth, any services that I pay for. And so what I do is I actually, those are in different lines, and I can actually, what it'll do is it calculate it at the bottom, and then it shows me on the left-hand side, after it does all that, it shows me my profit. In other words, what's left over after all my bills are paid. And so, again, for me, it works perfectly fine to show me exactly where I'm at. Now, for as small as my business is, a lot of times, yeah, I'm looking for ways to spend as much money as possible. Because if I don't, the government will keep it all.
Well, that would be one of my arguments for using one of the hosted accounting systems like QuickBooks, meaning, you know, my accountant has a full access to my books. I don't have to produce a QuickBooks file for them. They can log in anytime they want. You know, my I have staff here that does all my bookkeeping. But you know, the accountant logs in and handles a lot of payroll stuff or a lot of that stuff that they know a lot more than what I do, or will help us recategorize something. You know, like when I bought my vehicle, easy to put it in as an expense, but it's not where it belongs. So they'll adjust that, you know, and all that kind of good stuff. You know, could I figure that out on my own? Yes. But is that value? Could I have taken that time and go bill that time somewhere else and pay my accountant half the time I just billed? And now I know it's done right. And I get my maximum write off at the end. And it took me no effort because I have a login on the back end to the QuickBooks online system for them. So it auto magic again.
Now, John, it just happens. Going back, so let's use QuickBooks online. How hard or easy was that for you to set up?
Well, it depends on, well, there it goes again.
All right, Chris.
It depends. actually, super easy, depending on the version of QuickBooks online you're using. So let's go back to my accountant. My accountant is a QuickBooks partner. So I actually get QuickBooks Plus at a discount from him and a different level tier of support from QuickBooks. So I get a, since he's a QuickBooks partner, I can buy QuickBooks direct from him. He probably makes a couple pennies on it, which is fine for me. I don't know that for sure or not. But then I get a different support number as well, where when I call QuickBooks, looks like the couple times I've actually called it versus previous to this, it feels like I'm getting a level 2 of support or something like that, much better. But if you just go and buy, let's say you go buy QuickBooks Essentials or Simple Start. So like right now, Simple Start is, I think, $10 a month.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, for the first 6 months or something like that. I believe all of them come with an accountant login. So you can create an accountant login, shoot that over to your accountant, and they can log in.
Okay.
And I do not believe you get charged as an additional user for the accountant login. Then if you want more users, like Simple Start only is one user, I believe. After that, Essentials, you can have multiple users. And then I use what's called Plus, which includes time tracking, inventory, and 1099s. And then you can add on payroll to QuickBooks Online as well, depending on who does your payroll and how complex that is. Again, I would let your accountant or whoever your bookkeeper is drive that. Because a lot of the times, if it's just you and you have really simple payroll, you probably don't need a payroll service to do that. They can handle that for you and the things that change with that. But if you have multiple employees, different packages and all that kind of stuff, you need a payroll service to do that correctly. And perhaps your accountant or bookkeeper even provides that service outside of QuickBooks. So I would let your relationship guide you there. If you want to try to do it all yourself, QuickBooks Online, in my opinion, is a great place to start to do that.
And I think for $10 a month, that's you can at least drive it and see if it's going to work for you. It will integrate with Repair Shopper. And
the other thing it does have a mobile app too. It sounds a little bit crazy and I don't use it very often, but what I use it for is if I'm on site, it's just an easier way to pull up. If a customer asks me a balance or something like that, I can on the fly adjust some things in that app that I have done before, or a lot of times what I'll use is I might look to see before I go into a client sitting in the car to see if they owe me money so that I can go in there and ask for a check on the way in.
Nice.
So, and then maybe by the time I'm done, there's a check waiting for me when I leave. That doesn't happen very often, but that is another thing that I've done. So the other great thing is I consider that as a backup. You know, if you're talking about your disaster recovery, what if your office burns down? One, your stuff's in the cloud, but two, you still have all your accounting on your mobile device. And how hard is it just to grab another laptop and fire that up and log into QuickBooks? So, you know, we talk about disaster recovery with our clients. Don't forget about disaster recovery for your own business.
That is a good point. Yeah, that's probably the way to go for a lot of people and a lot of businesses.
Well, it's just simple. I mean, from the fact that you don't have to worry about it then. You know, supposedly they're backing it up. You don't have to worry about a backup so much, you know, that sort of thing.
Now, John, have you ever used the QuickBooks desktop version?
That would date me, but yes, way back when.
All right.
Now, I do have a lot of customers that use QuickBooks Enterprise, which is not a whole lot different than the desktop from the look and feel of it when you log into it. But, you know, it's more of a corporate thing, much more robust inventory, that sort of thing.
Okay. All right. So now you said right now, in probably for the last umpteen million years, you haven't had tickets. So you said you use Google, and basically do you create a customer file in your Google apps in order to be able, or G Suite, I'm sorry now, where you can actually follow that stuff?
Well, my tickets are all email based, meaning let's just say I get a ticket and because it's just me, it's easy for me just to keep that in email. So that ticket comes in, if it's an action item, I have, you know, if I'm going to piece this together in the system I use now, email comes in. I always try to push customers to email. I have a problem. Let's say my second monitor is not working. So that email comes in, I'll reply to them. I actually usually will change maybe the subject line a little bit. I have a three-letter designator for every client. So that would go into the subject line and I would reply to them. If I have to, I will, if it's a follow-up item, then I add something to Keep. There's an integration between Gmail and Google Keep, so I can automatically add that to Google Keep under a subtopic of the three-letter designator of that client. So I now have an action item in Google Keep. I can set a date or, you know, a time that I have to reply to that task by, and I can actually add a geographic location reminder to Google Keep that says, hey, if I'm at this spot, Google Keep will actually remind me so I don't forget if I happen to be in there. And it's not what I would call an actionable item. I don't know what that would be. Maybe it would be, you know, pick up the brownies that the customer left for me. I can get a reminder on that, but it doesn't have a timed reminder or something. That doesn't happen very often. So I have that whole system. And then I can also add that into Google Calendar if I need to, you know, with my G Suite. So I have that all figured out and that works great for me. You know, I've missed very little, but I don't have any way to say to the customer without manually doing it what I did this month for them.
Okay.
And, you know, my tickets all go into Google Keep now, and it used to go under Google Tasks before Keep, if anybody was wondering, and that was a lot less smooth for me. But now under Google Keep, I have all these completed tasks for the client. So I can open up that three-letter designator and the to-do list I have for that client, and I can see everything I've done. And I will manually put quote-unquote tickets into Google Keep. Like if I make a router change, I'll make notes about what I did and that I backed up the router and all that kind of good stuff. But all of that should be going into a ticket system, which it is going. And I've probably been playing with several ticket systems for probably the last 3 months I've been looking. I've actually beta tested a couple of them with some clients. I think we had one of them on. Didn't we have Kazu Help Desk on, C-A-Y-Z-U?
Yes.
I think you talked to them. They're great people and all that. One of the big things that really surprised me when you're looking at a ticketing system is the amount of ticketing systems that do not have recurring or schedulable tickets in them. A lot of the systems I looked at, I didn't have something so I could have an automated ticket recurring. So like every month, let's just pick something dumb. I got to reboot a server every month. I want to schedule that just as a reoccurring ticket. The first of every month, I got to reboot the server at Bob's Meatpacking or whatever. a lot of them don't have the ability just to put in an auto recurring ticket. And that really surprised me.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a good point, John, because I think a lot of times as I sit there and look, sometimes we get busy and we have several different things going on with different customers. And part of the things where I like the online ticketing system is I can basically, now again, you have to make yourself do this, and this is hard sometimes. I go in there and I put a note in of what portion I've done and what I need to do next, so that I keep kind of a tally of it, because a lot of times if I'm working after work or on the weekends, it might have been a few days before I actually touch base with that customer for whatever it is they needed. And I might not forget it unless I were to write it down on a list or have a ticketing system that already has that documentation in there where I can go back and look at, okay, I got to do this, 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 and this.
Well, that's one of the cool things about SherpaDesk. It has something that are called to-dos. From the simplest point of view, a to-do is exactly what you think it is. But you can also create template to-dos. So let's say, what would be a good example of this? You're installing a new router. All right. So you can create a template to-do that says, okay, here's all the things that you need to do when you install a new router. So make sure that the time and the time zone is set correctly. Make sure the DNS is set correctly. You know, all the little things with inside a router setting that you have as a default for your company, you can set up so that you don't forget when you set up that router, and or let's say it's a server or whatever, so that you don't leave certain ports open, so that the firewall is set up correctly, so the IPD or IPS is set up correctly. Great thing about that is if you're in a company with multiple employees, you can assign each one of those segments of that to-do to a different employee in your help desk. So maybe Jeff does the IPD and the firewall setup, but John does everything else in the router or whatever that might be. And then you can just mark off individual items under that to-do as complete, but the whole to-do isn't complete, or the whole ticket isn't complete until everything is done. And then Everybody can comment on each portion that they did. So, you know, you might even, the other nice thing within SherpaDesk is you can actually collaborate with outside vendors on that too. So maybe you have a to-do where it's an install of a new rack and you have all these to-dos under that, but you could actually have the outside vendor mark their portion complete as well. Almost like a mini project management type thing. So depending on the kind of power you need, you know, that's in there. But it also keeps you, I think we were talking about to-do lists or, you know, our policies or the way we laid out last week on the show. This is a great way where you can do that. You know, how do you onboard a new client? What are the defaults for installing a new server? Plus, you don't have to recreate that every time you do that.
That's good.
The other thing I think is really important in a ticket system too is I would use the ticketing system for everything, meaning a lot of the tickets you may generate are probably stuff that you create on your own. I went in and I did a firmware update on a router. You'd want to log that. You checked all the firmware on the printers in the office. You'd put a ticket in and mark it as completed. Because this is all stuff that you could present to the customer. It's all stuff for you, also stuff for you to present to the customer if something bad happens. Well, why didn't you do that? Well, I did.
Right.
And here's when I did it and why I did it. You know, I like reminders. Like right now, my reminders to check UPS batteries are all in my calendar. I'd rather that be an auto-generated ticket, you know, moving forward, which it will be. But, you know, pretty much the way I want my ticketing system to work for me, especially as a solo tech, is once everything's in there, it's just going to tell me what I need to do every day. I don't really need to think about it. So I'll get pinged, you know, you can set a reminder prior to the due date, check that UPS battery on that server. I can then schedule that on my calendar when I know I can take that server down, or I can test that battery in that server without worries and then mark it done and or replace the battery. Plus then all of that's done. If you have it tied into your accounting system and they're not a flat fee client, you can bill for that time. You know, so if we link this chain together bit by bit by bit, we can see how powerful the ticket becomes.
Right. Absolutely. Oh, well, I know a lot of people are probably thinking that it takes a lot of time and effort, because I know sometimes when John's talking, I, you know, zoned out. Especially when he's talking about his whole G Suite system. But no, there's a lot of, what seems like a lot of complexity, But the reality is, again, you want to save yourself time and effort in the future and have good the ability to basically be able to go back and look at the information and either give it to your customer or know exactly what you're doing. So these things are very important, and it is worthwhile to take the time. I know the hardest thing I had when I first started using a ticketing system was to actually, when I get the device, to not start tearing into it and start fixing it. I would take it over and I would input all the information, serial number, all these, you know, what type of computer it was, into that customer's ticket before I ever started working on it. And it does a couple things in the ticketing system that I use. It will send out an email to let them know, hey, this is what it came in for. So again, another nice thing too is the automation of communicating with the customer. I know a lot of people complain about calling the customer, and I don't talk to my customers. I don't. You don't really need to. It's like when you're fixing a computer, as long as you're communicating with them and letting them know what's going on, they're fine with that. A lot of times you won't even get a response unless you're asking for, hey, this is what's happening. Here's what it's going to cost. Are you okay with this? Then usually they'll send a response back, or sometimes they'll say, hey, that's great, whatever. But sometimes they're just, you know, the communication is going out. They're getting it. They're opening it up, but that you don't receive a response back, which is fine. That saves you time. Because again, we talked about, it only takes me 5 minutes, or it only takes me 2 minutes to call my customer. Really? By the time you pull out your phone, you dial the phone number, you get on there, they ask you 10 bazillion questions about things that have nothing to do with the repair. You're spending a lot. I've heard techs talk about spending upwards of 15 minutes. Now, times that over X amount of customers, that's a lot of time. That's a quarter of an hour.
Let me drone on a little bit more too, Jeff. I think this point is excellent. I like the ability too in your ticketing system to be able to add others to the ticket as you're moving forward. So let's give the example of, I'm dealing with my VoIP provider. Let's say somebody calls me about a problem with a VoIP phone. We determine it's kind of not a network issue or we don't understand it, but then we can include that VoIP support, that provider support into our ticket, and maybe they can collaborate in the ticket as well. And then maybe you want to add somebody else in that office to the ticket. So, you know, make sure you kind of have an understanding of where you want to go with the flexibility of a ticket once you create it. You mean, can you add others to that ticket? Can you bring in a third party to that ticket? You know, I think, because again, I just go back to that 5 minute phone call. So what if it's 5 minutes? What if you got to make 10 of them a day?
Right.
It's almost a darn hour on the phone. Not to mention you're going to get distracted because you always have to start that phone call with, hey, how are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, you know, not that you don't care. And maybe I would suggest a better way to do those phone calls is to actually schedule phone calls to make that kind of personal connection, right, if you want to do that. But don't do that on your tickets or on your support.
Yeah.
When
you've got something ongoing, you're working on the problem at that time. Now, if you need to get into some sort of specifics where maybe you're talking about making a big decision and you need to get a hold of that customer, then go ahead and do that. You know, you can reach out to them, and then it's going to be worth the 5, 10, 15 minutes to actually touch base with that customer. But a lot of times the stuff we do, hey, here, your computer's on the bench and it's running a scan right now. Okay. Number one, the customer, even if they do care, I don't care that they don't care. I know.
They're busy too. They just want to read the email. But again, taking it all the way to the end though, I still think there maybe is a point in a ticket where don't be afraid to pick up the phone.
Yes, absolutely.
You don't want your customer to get frustrated either. You know, even if it's, you do have to make that 5 minute phone call that says, hey, I know there's a lot flying through this ticket. Just want you to know I'm reading it all and I'm on top of it. You know, if anything bad happens, I will call you or I'll follow up with a personal email to you just to let you know what's going on.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, if third-party support is, you know, saying all the acronyms that we love to hear and you're throwing them all back in the mix, don't expect your customer to understand what's going on. But a lot of the times I think the customer just likes to see something happening.
And Here's the thing too, with the talking about when you're able to put something in the ticket and it emails the customer automatically, or you could set it up that you could text message them or whatever. I don't do that. I don't want to get involved in all that. Hey, read your email. People do it enough times a day. It's okay. But the sometimes you also need a way to put a personal note in that ticket that maybe the customer doesn't need to see. So
absolutely,
you might put something in there like going, I can't believe this idiot did this again. You could do that. And then it would be documented to just where you could see it. So when the, if you had, here's another thing too. I was just thinking about this off the top of my head, since we're going down this rabbit trail, is that if you're able to, a lot of times, like with our ticketing system, the customer can actually, when I send that first initial email out, they can actually log in and look at what is actually going on in the ticket, which is good. Does anybody do that? No, but they have ability to.
When I send you a laptop for repair, I actually like it because when you get the laptop, you hit me with a ticket that says, hey, I got it.
Right. That's true.
And then if I have anything else, I hit you back just in the ticket.
Yep. That is true.
I mean, not that I don't like to talk to you, Jeff, but it's a heck of a lot easier during a busy day just to reply to the ticket.
Exactly. So I think, we've come up with a lot of good points on not only the differences between tickets, invoicing, accounting, receipts. Now, John, do you use it? Let's end off with this. Do you use any type of receipts for your customers?
I do not.
Okay.
Paid invoice is my receipt or completion of service, but I want to end it off on one other thing. The little dirty little secret about ticketing systems and why I don't have one yet and haven't, you know, even though I've been doing this since 1995. When you choose one, depending on how you've been doing business with your customers, is unfortunately my customers are very poorly trained to use a ticketing system, meaning that all they've ever had to do was send me an email. Mm. So, you know, I've beta tested, you know, seriously, I've been looking at ticketing systems for the last 3 months, but let's be honest, I've thought about jumping on the ticket bandwagon and have a couple times, probably several times over the last 5 to 10 years. The problem is I've never really quote unquote needed it before. So I've developed my own system. It's always been easier, but now that I need to do it, my customers are very poorly trained to use one because they've always had very easy access to just emailing me. So now you got to remember, if you're in my position, or even if you're going to roll out a ticketing system, depending on your relationship with your customer and how that works, you know, you're going to want to probably roll something out to them that says maybe slowly, or says, here are the benefits. You know, you can log into the system and see what I'm doing. You can see all the history. You're going to get all this fun reporting we've talked about. Keep in mind that a lot of the time they won't care. They just want the problem solved. So you're going to have to figure out how to maybe juice the system or whatever to make them interested in using it. Even if it's you for the first while taking the emails you get and manually creating the tickets for them, you know, putting something in your email footer that says, if you need help, this is where you need to go. You know, all that kind of stuff. So you might need to make a push to make your ticketing system actually work for the client. You know, Matt on Podnets Pro talks about this too. You know, a ticket gets made for everything, or put a ticket in, or, you know, they get a lot of calls and the receptionist puts the ticket in. So, you know, make sure you have the front end system to get your clients start using it planned out as well.
That's a good point, because I think about, from my business standpoint, I tend to, if I get an email, I will actually input the ticket myself. And then they'll obviously, at that point, once it's in the system, then we can email back and forth, or they can log in and look at what's going on with the system. But yeah, if you want them to actually use it, that's a whole different ball of wax. And again, just for those that don't know, John is predominantly like 100% businesses. And so he can set this up to make his life a little bit easier, so that people in the office will put that ticket into that system. In other words, John, from your standpoint, most of the time people have to log into something to basically get in there. So now, could you set that up as a tab in their browser, or would that be a dangerous
option?
Well,
there's a lot of different ways. Obviously, depending on the system you're using, you can have a custom email address per client. You can have just one customer. So like a lot of the, let's break it down. So a ticketing system usually, and I'll pick on you, Jeff, we'll just say you're Jeff at I'll just say podnuts.com. So you send me an email. The system knows that I'm dealing with the business podnuts.com because it sees that. So that email is received at support@mavengroup.net. It's automatically going to put it under the podnuts.com business. Now, maybe your boss is already set up in the system as a person that when he or she logs in can see all the tickets. But an individual user will probably only see the tickets that they create. So Jeff will only see Jeff's tickets. But if Chris logs in, he's going to see everybody's tickets. So he can get an overview of everything that's happening in the business for that particular client.
Okay.
So you could also do it like other systems I look at. You know, you could have a link on your website or a web page where they go out and they fill out a form. And then you can have required fields like, you know, obviously email address, maybe phone, but you might require them to put in a computer identifier, whatever that is. Maybe they have a computer number or the service tag of their Dell PC or something like that that says, hey, this is the computer I'm talking about. Because a lot of the times, you know, if I look at a client, I might get an email from Shelly at business.com, and there might be four Shelly's at this customer that has 85 users, you know, just by chance.
Right.
You know, and I might be, there might be Shelly A, Shelly B, Shelly C, but you know, I don't deal with them every day. You know, I got 800 endpoints, so I might need a little bit more help to say, hey, what computer do I need to remote into? You know, so I might require a field. So if they use the form, or if you, and perhaps the only way they can get help is to use the form, maybe that's an option. You know, you're going to have to develop on how you want the system to work for you.
Okay. Yep.
So, you know, and then all of that is interconnected. So either you can receive an email or you could say, no, I'm not going to take email. But if I get a personal email, I'll create a ticket, maybe respond to their email that says, I've created a ticket in the system. You will get notified. If you need anything else in regards to this, you know, use the ticket that you're going to get. So, and the cool thing and a cool way you can do that is, I don't know if everybody knows this, but within Gmail, and I'm sure you can do this in Exchange and all that too, there are canned responses.
Right.
So you could just create a canned response in your Gmail or your G Suite that says exactly what I just said. A ticket has been created for this. If you need anything further, please respond to the ticket.
There you go.
You know, this sort of that sort of thing. So, you know, make sure, just don't roll out the ticketing system and say, hey, life is good. Sort of do a little bit of planning on how you want this ticketing to work. Because if you just roll it out, your customers aren't going to use it.
Right. So. And you can also adapt it over time. So be aware of that.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you will, because you'll never get it right the first time, just like anything we do in this.
Exactly.
So
very cool. All right, John, I think we've covered pretty much everything we can talk about as far as tickets, invoices. I'm sure there's more, but I think we're going to end it off there. Let's go ahead and take another quick break and we'll get into the next portion. I want to let everybody know that you can sign up to be a guest on either the Computer Repair Podcast, this show, and be a part of the roundtable, talking about whatever types of subjects that would help other techs out there, or Podnets Daily, where you can talk about yourself and your business and how you do business. And you can do that by sending an email to guest@podnuts.com. It's really easy. guest@podnuts.com. Now, I normally, you know, obviously this show is every Sunday at 4 p.m. to about 5:30 p.m. So it's about an hour and a half, maybe a little 15 minutes setup time. In Podnuts Daily, I do every Sunday at 8 o'clock. And if you've never been on a Podnuts show, then I would encourage you to sign up for a Podnuts Daily where we can talk about your business, kind of get the audio worked out. It's not live. It's a little more, or it's a little less nerve-wracking than being on a live show, and we can edit things and do all kinds of magic that will make your life easier if you're a little nervous about coming on. But again, I look at things like Podnuts Daily is a couple guys sitting around, or gals, and sitting around drinking an iced tea or whatever and just sharing shop talk. And that's basically what it is. So if you guys have noticed, anyone that listens to Podnuts Daily, it's been a while since there's been a Podnuts Daily. And that's partially my fault just because of my busyness as far as scheduling. So the one way you guys could help is by actually signing up to be on the show. And again, you can do that by using guest at podnuts.com. All right.
And I would suggest, Jeff, that if anybody's nervous about coming on, everybody has something to offer. So I would encourage anybody and everybody to shine up.
And I'll say this again. So a lot of people don't realize this, or I don't know, maybe they do, but probably, and I've done almost close to 300 shows. And I will say that probably for the first 150 shows that I've done, of any of the shows I've done, I probably, my heart was beating a million miles an hour when I first started. But once you get into the flow of the conversation, the butterflies and everything go away. And it's just, like I said, just a couple people talking and hanging out. And it's a great time. And the number one response that we always get is, gosh, that was a lot of fun. And of course, I say, as I do to my kids, I know. So with that, definitely sign up for the show and we will get you scheduled on there. We've got a bunch of open Sundays. So, and I know a lot of people will say, you know, Sunday's a family day and stuff like that. And that's fine. And I understand, but I would encourage you, yeah, one time out of the year, take an hour and, you know, sign up and give your information out there that other people can learn from. And yes, we all do things differently so we can learn from everybody, no matter how new you are in this business, because you probably are thinking about, see, when you're young and dumb, I mean, young, then you're pretty much, you've got all these great ideas and you're going to take over the world, but you probably have some things that we go, ah, I'm not going to do that. But there's a lot of good ideas I've learned from a lot of people that are just starting out. So I definitely appreciate that. And so do the listeners. All right. So let's go ahead and let's answer some emails and take some calls. If there are any, phone lines are open. The call in number is 1-888-697-0162. All right. And the first email, this is from Jacob Newdorf. Says, hey, Jeff, I want to say that I really love your show. Thank you. It has given me countless hours of entertainment and invaluable information as well. That's awesome. I have been listening to your show for quite some time and have recently gotten the courage to start my own computer repair business. That is really awesome. We definitely like that. Yeah, I like that. The idea of this show is to be encouraging, share valuable information that somebody can learn from, and take that and do what you need to do with it. Starting your own business, it's not as hard as you think. And you can, if this is a passion for you, it's something that you can easily do with a little bit of help from some of us. All right, so I have heard you talk about Arachnus routers and switches and have also heard the guys on Podnuts Pro praise them as well. Man, Podnuts Pro is getting a lot of publicity on this show. You know, I don't know how I feel about that, especially since, you know, Marvin's been making fun of my haircut and all kinds of other things. But no, talking about, you know, how smooth the format of the show is. I don't know what they mean by that, but whatever. Anyways, the praises were enough to get me searching for one to try out myself. But before I could, I was bombarded with partnership options. I was hoping I could get some insight to which partnerships you all have and pros and cons and when to make partnerships. Also, what it takes to become a partner and how much it costs. I've heard you all talk about a few such as IL8, AppRiver, and TechData, but I've never heard anyone go further than just mentioning them. Thank you in advance for all the info, and I look forward to your show every week. Keep it up. Thank you, Jacob. Appreciate that. So, John, you want to tackle this? So what types of things do you need to sign up for a partnership?
I would suggest you don't need to sign up for any partnership to get started. Now, there are some things, like, let's say you want to try the Arachnus products. You do need to sign up for a partnership with IL8, who is the distributor of the Arachnus products. That is a free partnership, so there's nothing you need to do. So what a partnership does get you might be NFR, which is not for resale products. So what an NFR product is something that you could use in-house that you'll get a nice discount on. You might get 20, 30, 40, 50%. Some manufacturers will actually give you free product to try, whether that be forever or a short period of time. You might get better pricing versus somebody that is not a partner. You might get more perks, like maybe free shipping or free shipping over a certain level of cost. Like if you ordered $100, they might give you free shipping. Let's see. Oh, I know the Arachnus or IL-8 partnership. You have so long, you can buy a product and you can return it in a period of time with no questions asked. So let's say you get that router, you sign up for a partnership, you get that router or product you want to test from Arachnus. You don't like it, you can ship it back and they'll refund you, no questions asked. You might get put in a different tier level for support, meaning instead of calling in the general support, you might have a partner support phone number that you could get access to. That'll be great. And usually that is one of the main reasons that I will partner with a company is to get better support. I don't do a whole lot of other partnering with other product things except to get better support. The other thing you might do is through a partnership, you might, and these are things that I would call outliers, you might get better pricing than somebody that does have a partnership. Although I would suggest that Amazon has become the great equalizer in that a lot of the times, no matter who you're partnering with, unless you do a very high volume, you're not going to get better pricing than what you can find on Amazon. If it's a specialty product, though, you might only be able to get it from the partner that you're dealing with, and it might not be available on a third-party seller like Amazon or something like that. Another advantage of partnering is you may not get what's called a gray market product. A lot of the times, you have to be careful of the sellers you might buy from on Amazon, as you might be getting a product that was meant for the European or a different market, so it may not have a U.S.-based warranty. So you got to be a little careful on that. Anything else that I'm missing, Jeff, that you can think of about the benefits of partnering with? Now, some of the partnerships that you're talking about that might have a price or a fee to get associated with them. ASCII membership is a type of partnership that you could do that does require a fee or an annual fee. But there are benefits for that. So if you become an ASCII partner, you might be involved in a discount tier to buy from distributors like Tech Data. You might get access to insurance or marketing programs that may or may not benefit your business. You also become an instant member in what I would call a fraternity, depending on the membership organization that you're joining. That can be good and bad. ASCII, I would suggest, is very good, meaning you can find a lot of other professionals to deal with that may or may not have more knowledge than you, but I only hear good things about the ASCII partnership. Now, there are also free partnerships. What is it? ACRBO, right. Channel Pro. I think CompTIA has a free partnership level, and then you could also become a CompTIA member. So again, just like evaluating your ticketing system is who do you want to become a partner with? Meaning, how much time do you devote to that partner? How much time are they expecting from you to give to them as a partner? Some partnerships require you to provide information to them, meaning how much did you sell? We need information back on our products that we're selling to you or you're distributing. So, you know, you may want to stay away from those if you don't have the time or effort or the willingness to provide information back to them if they require it.
Okay. Yeah.
I've droned on enough. Did I miss anything?
I don't think so. I had sent an email back letting him know about the IL-8. I think it's a something/dealership. Anyway, we'll add it to the show notes so that you can go there and sign up and get their not for resale stuff that you can use in your own office and work with it, figure out how it works. I loved all the equipment I'm using. I actually bought some switches and stuff from John. And so in the Arachnus switches, and they're, as far as I can tell, they're rock solid. Now, I haven't done anything that I wanted to do with them as far as learning about VLANs and all that kind of stuff, but that is on the roadmap down the road. So, all right, we do have a call, and this is Chris Rivera. And Chris, his name of his business is Chris's Tech Repair. He is from Belgrade, Florida. And he wants more information of contracts for business clients. So let me go ahead and bring him in. Hey, Chris, welcome to Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast. How you doing?
Hey, Jeff. How you doing?
I am doing excellent.
And our friend John.
Hey, Chris.
So now it's funny because I just had an email response that you I was going to read on the show, but go ahead and ask the question of what you wanted to know, because I know we had some back and forth about the Technibble computer business kit.
Correct. Yeah, I'm a little nervous, but I'm a first time business owner, and I am about to actually meet with a business client this week to start up a contract. And I've known you when you sent me your sample, it was like very short, and I'm like, is that it? So my question is just, what should I include? And I know John does a lot of business. Like, do I include hourly rates? Do I include, you know, off hours or anything like that? Because I don't want to downplay the pricing and then have to move it up later.
Okay. So now, as far as the documentation we were talking about that I had sent you was after you bought the Technibble computer business kit, I had sent you my work order or what I give to my customer to basically fill out with their information. And on the back, you can flip it over. And I do a one-page document because I'm a simple guy. And they can sign it. And basically, it's basically all the things that I'm not responsible for, which is pretty much everything. And so, and I let them know that. And they sign it, and it's all good. But now you're talking about, as far as pricing and things like that, John, how do you actually get your pricing over to your customers? Because I don't know that I document anything that I give to my customers other than, I think the other thing I sent you, Chris, was the, managed services, what I cover and what I don't in the different price tiers that we have there. That's the only thing I think I really give pricing.
That's basically what I'm sending. Yeah, okay. That's basically what I'm sending them, and what I'm trying to MSP myself, quote unquote. I know you don't like the three letter word, but you know, I want to offer that to my clients. So I do have some clients, but I'm trying to move them over to the Ninja platform that I do have.
Okay.
Well, first of all, this is a fantastic question, and don't be nervous, Chris, because I'm going to be just as nervous answering it. But the question is very broad, and I think we could do a whole probably podcast on this, and this might be even something to circle back to.
Yes.
I know we've touched on the topic a little bit as well, but I always suggest when you're going to set up any sort of contract and the way you're going to do that contract, the biggest thing to keep in mind is that, you know, you're presenting something to your client that says, here, you're going to be held to these standards and this is what my company will and will not do. Keep in mind that when you present that document to them and they sign it, that you're held by those same standards too. So if you say you're going to be there within 4 hours or you're going to provide same day service, blah, 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 you know, you have to service that. You're held by that same contract. So I'm always a little bit nervous, and I'm kind of like Matt Rainey, is we do very few contracts. We do more and more one-off agreements, either on, you know, on the services we provide. So if it's an hourly client, if we're billing hourly, then we'll make an agreement on that. And then my agreement would usually be that if this is going to change, we'll give 30 days notice and you and I will discuss what it's going to change to. The longer your contract is or whatever you're presenting to the client, when you first get in front of them, the more pages it is, it's going to be more difficult for them to sign off on that. It's also going to be more difficult for you to change it later. So the more simple you can keep your contract, and then I would suggest maybe add more to that contract as the relationship moves forward. And my example would be new client, we meet for the first time. It might be to the effect that I don't even put any paperwork in front of them, but it might be an email afterwards that says, hey, we agreed on $100 per hour. You bought maybe a block of time at this price, or, you know, just whatever we agreed on, and then just have them respond back to that email. That's probably enough to get started. If the relationship is much more mature and they want, and you want something on paper, I would put the bare minimum on that paper that says, this is what I'm going to do for you, and this is what I expect back from you in return. But then moving forward, and let's say you decide that, well, they need import protection, then that might just, and the way I handle that is, we had a discussion. You have 20 PCs now. We're going to do endpoint protection on those PCs for $5 a month, or you're doing your RMM platform or whatever is included in that for $5 a month per PC. You know, that price won't change unless I notify you, and we'll just add new PCs or take PCs on as you add or remove them. You know, just keeping it very simple. The same with adding on backup or maybe adding on a UTM appliance later. You know, just keeping it very simple as you move forward through that. What I find with the business size I deal with, which is mostly smaller business, you know, when I did my first contract and I showed up with four or five pages and I said, here, sign here, they weren't very receptive to signing that big of a document. And I don't know if I would be either. So, you know, just keep that in mind as you're moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and as far as what I've done, as far as the smaller businesses that I deal with, probably much smaller than even John's, is that I will, if somebody contacts me via email or whatever, or a phone call, I'll just give them my pricing. Here's my pricing. It's $80 an hour. And, you know, and then a lot of times if we're, you know, installing something or adding equipment, I'm just going to send them a quote, which I use from the computer business kit. And that quote's going to have the hardware prices, whatever that is, whatever I'm charging them for the hardware. It's going to have how many hours I think it's going to take me to do this. So the last job I quoted was like 10 hours, and put that on there. Here's the total price. So they took that total price and they decided whether or not they wanted to go with me. Then it was brought up after that, after I'd gotten all the equipment installed, okay, we want to protect these PCs. What do we need to do? And I said, well, you've got five in here. I do offer a monthly service that will do updates and give you antivirus and all that kind of stuff. Well, there's only two important computers that they had in their office, and that's the ones they wanted protected. So they put that on there, and the rest we're just going to do something with, maybe Windows Defender or something like that. So they're paying a monthly fee for those two machines, plus they want a backup. So I hooked them up with Carbonite Backup, which again is just something that I basically invoice for each and every time, or, you know, once a year. And basically they'll get that reoccurring once a year invoice and just pay it, and we'll keep on going from there. So most of the interaction as far as pricing and stuff like that was via email back and forth. I told them what I charge and gave them a quote, and they said, okay. And then I went in and started the job. So that's probably the easiest way to do it. And like John said, we're all the same way. None of us want to have to actually read through a contract. Very rarely do people read through my one-page contract that I have on the work order just because they don't want to read through it. Now, every once in a while, you get somebody that reads the whole thing, but I can't imagine them sitting there reading five pages of documentation. Now, with that being said, in the Technible Computer Business Kit, there are also bigger work orders that have more verbiage, I guess, or more wording of what they cover and different things like that. What I did was I took that same information and I condensed it down and got it to fit on the back of that one page, all the things that were important to me. Now you can go through that yourself and look at it and find out the things that are important for you. And here's the thing. You're just starting out. That's fine. You can use it as is, or what you're going to find out is you probably will go and change it maybe two or three times as time goes on. You go, yeah, you know, I didn't think about this. I really need to make sure that I let them know that I don't cover this or I do cover this. And so you'll probably make those adjustments over time, but really you're suable for everything, to be honest. And you're just trying to do the best you can to protect and really just have an agreement between you and the customer. And most customers are fine with that.
Yeah, I do primarily residential right now. And I did close my residential contract, first one actually this week.
Oh, good. Okay, awesome. That's great.
So they agreed to pay the whole year up front, and I, you know, that gave me a strength to say, okay, that's good. I think I did it right. You know, and I'm gonna send them the paperwork this weekend. I mean today, to show what we have or what I offer.
Well, I would suggest that the best thing here is don't overthink it. Two, obviously, Jeff and I aren't lawyers, and we don't provide sage legal advice. So, but
true,
you know, and, but there are things to keep in mind here. You know, is the laws are different in every state. Like an NDA in Michigan is a lot different than an NDA in California, where you can't even do one, a non-disclosure, you know, or a right to work agreement. But, you know, develop maybe realistic expectations both on your part and the client's, you know, and I always suggest there's a legal term called best effort. Just, you know, that's what you want to fall back on, that you're going to provide best effort service. You know, you're not promising anything. So your contract should all be based on best effort. You know, I'm not guaranteeing you that you'll never lose data. I'm not guaranteeing you that you'll never get a virus infection. I'm not guaranteeing, but I will give you my best effort to make sure that that never happens to that effect. That's my two cents.
I want to give them my best effort because this is part-time at the moment. I want to turn it into a full-time business, but at the moment, my full-time job right now is in the biz. So I'm trying to build up my, you know, my clientele so I can do the business full-time.
And Chris, that's the other thing you have to factor in too when you're doing any type of contract with a customer. You have to factor in the time that you are available. And I let even my business clients know I am not available. I'm not available from 9 to 5, you know, 5 days a week. Sometimes I'm not available 9 to 5, 7 days a week. It's just, but I will get to you. A lot of times I do things off hours. I'll do a lot of things remotely. And then other times when I have to go in, I will schedule a time when I can meet up with somebody at the business and get in there. But I don't promise them I'm not going to call back after 4 hours or anything like that. Now, most of the time, even when I'm at work, I can respond to an email and just let them know, yes, I see there's a problem. I will look into it as soon as I can. And they're fine.
And that's what I'm doing too. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do too. Is like, I can answer phone calls. I can do emails. I can even run my remote, the Ninja on my computer just to check everything, make sure everything's okay. At least, you know, do the updates, start the updates, start a scan. Make sure the scan caught anything like that, or even a backup. Just say, make sure everything's on, you know, flowing. If there's an emergency, you got to wait till I get out of work.
Make sure you're not charging too little.
Yeah, and I hope that you know, we've answered your question as far as the documentation. But yeah, you're doing the right things. Just keep doing what you're doing and adjust it over time.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. I did listen to y'all 10 hours a day, so do no jump, which is nice sometimes. So I got nothing to do at work sometimes, so why not?
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate it. Well, Chris, you have a great rest of your day, and I'm sure we'll be hearing from you soon.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, have a good day.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Now, that's a man that sounds like he's on the right track.
Absolutely. That's good stuff there. So I guess I don't have to bring up that second email. That kind of covered it. That's awesome.
All right.
I love when a plan comes together. All right, John, it's that time. Give one parting good thought and let people know where they can find you.
John@mavengroup.net. Everybody that we talked about, the HIPAA roundtable that we thought we were going to do, I haven't forgot about you. I've just been too busy to get on that. That's it. John@mavengroup.net. Be nice to each other.
All right. Awesome. Appreciate you coming out again, John. It has been a great show as always. And I love your 2 cents. Even though it's all, you know,
take it for what it's worth.
That's right. 2 cents. Anyways. All right. Come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnest.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on the conversation by calling in live like Chris did today and hanging out in the chat room. You can also send an email to podnuts@podnuts.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162. If you're afraid to talk to us live online, you can leave a voicemail. We will play it on the show. We have audio available over at podnuts.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can be notified when the show is live by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.